Listen and stream the only talk radio, Freedom 106.5, for the only talk that matter.
We are entering at this point in time a discussion with two special guests, the impact of crime on business as well as the ease of doing business. And joining us here this morning, two gentlemen that have been with us before. Let's welcome back to our program once more, Chairman of the Confederation of Regional Business Chambers, that's Vivek Charan. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Good morning. Happy to be on this morning.
And also with us this morning, Vice Chair of the Confederation of Regional Business Chambers, that's Ricardo Mohammed. Welcome back to the program. Nice to have you.
Thank you very much, and good morning to you and your listeners. Good morning, everyone.
Let's just refresh in the minds of our listeners exactly who you gentlemen are, some of the things that you're involved in. Let's start with Vivek Charan. Tell us a bit about your role as Chair of the Confederation of Regional Business Chambers and some of the things that you're involved in otherwise.
Well, as Chair of the Confederation of Regional Business Chambers, the Confederation of Regional Business Chambers comprises of 12 business chambers.
Okay, we seem to be having a bit of a connectivity issue with Mr. Charan's.
Yes, and the issues of small and medium business.
Mm-hmm.
And to represent on a national basis, the things that affect us nationally, in terms of, you know, business and things like that. It's really been working quite well. I'm happy to say we actually were joined by two other chambers, the Retail Association and the Yachting Association, over just before the pandemic and so on. And really and truly, it's because that we stuck together and because we kind of been working together that we've really had a seat at the table, and we've really been able to have dialogue with the people in power and to represent not only for ourselves or the 12 chambers, but represent, you know, nationally for business in a sense. Because really, if you're in business, we are supposed to want the same thing. We want a safer environment. We want a greater ease of doing business. We want a better society. We want people to become employed. You know, we want to grow. We want to expand. We want everybody to do better. So really, you know, there shouldn't be any need for any differences if we all want the same thing.
And that's a very same question to you, Ricardo Mohammed. Tell us about your role as Vice Chair of the Confederation of Regional Business Chambers and some of the other things that you're involved in.
Sure. So as my chairman said, Mr. Charan, We really came together as a group of smaller chambers when we realized that, you know, our voices weren't being heard strongly enough. We weren't getting any opportunities for a lot of meetings and so on. And when we formed the Confederation, it was really to deal with all the issues and national issues and otherwise that affects all business in whatever particular way or field, so that we could have lobbied for the better good of the business community within Trinidad and Tobago. Of course, that will directly lead to a better impact on the economy of the country. Apart from that, I also sit as the president of the Eastern Business Merchants Association. It was a new chamber that was formed in the Sangiran district in 2020, just around the pandemic time. I myself being a former president of the Sangirani Chamber of Commerce, and I also sit as the president of the Sangirani Hindu School Parents Teachers Network. And I'm involved in a lot of community building activities within the district and area. It's all geared towards improving life for our citizenry here in this part of this neck of the woods, as you say.
We're here this morning to discuss an issue that one way or the other we've been discussing as a nation for a pretty long period of time. And that's the issue of crime and how crime impacts on our lives, our ability to do many things, business, of course, being directly impacted. You see businesses being robbed, business owners being victims of crime. And there are several other elements that go along with that, because there's additional security and all of these other things that impact on businesses. Sometimes you lose your clientele, your market, because people aren't doing what they used to because of crime. A host of things. But before we get to that, as this Confederation of Regional Business Chambers, you all would represent the views of a wide cross-section of our society. As mere fact of being leaders of this Confederation of regional business chambers, and the chambers themselves are their own entities and they've all come under this umbrella head. This morning, our police commissioner, Erla Harewood Christopher, has rated her first 100 days in office as excellent. Do you agree?
Good morning. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, crime has become a very, very sensitive topic. And what we've been seeing is a lot of times both the Minister of National Security and Ms. Harewood Christopher have come under fire because of some of the things that they've been saying. And it's not that what they were saying has been directed at anyone in particular. It is just that people feel that what they've been saying sort of alludes to an insensitivity as to what is happening at the moment. Now, with regard to Ms. Christopher, we've actually had meetings with Ms. Harewood Christopher and so on. And I believe Ms. Christopher is doing the best that she can do under the circumstances. The reality of the situation is that the police would always have a lot more intelligence than we would have when it comes to certain things. However, when we look at the wider scope of things, when we look at the fact that people are continuing to be killed and people are continuing to be very uncomfortable, there hasn't really seemed to be any reduction in the amount of criminal activity going on out there. And, you know, when we look at the fact that in the beginning, like many years ago, when these tit-for-tat revenge killings, as it were, it used to be a regional thing. It used to be a territorial thing. For example, a gang member steps into a rival gang member's territory, they get killed, and vice versa. Now what we're seeing is that these gang fights, and assassinations and executions and so on are happening beyond the areas within which the gangs are resident. So it's starting to happen in bars, and it's starting to happen on the streets, and it's starting to happen at fast food places. You know, it's starting to happen basically anywhere, and that has put the society on edge. The society is now feeling, well, this isn't just about them. We are the ones who may be caught in the crossfire. When we're watching, and when these things happen, it's gone viral. It's viral on social media. You know, every day there are almost videos that are being posted every week on Monday morning after every weekend. We're also seeing all these machine guns being used, these semi-automatic rifles and AR-15s being used to rob places like supermarkets, some small supermarkets in various areas. Businesses and so on, and CCTV footage of these things are also going viral. When we put all these things together, there's a sense of, you know, frustration, and there's an even greater sense of fear and a lack of confidence in what is going on. So, you know, we can only ask that the authorities, be it the COP or the Minister of National Security, or which are the only two people we can look towards for, you know, who have the authority in a sense to actively deal with crime. You and I as citizens, we don't have the ability to combat the bad guys with the guns out there, or the guys who may be coming and are killing people with impunity, whoever gets caught in the crossfire. We don't have the legal authority to deal with them, and in many cases, we don't even have the guns to protect ourselves. But nonetheless, when it is that we find the people in office making statements, they themselves have to recognize the environment in which they are making these statements is an exceedingly sensitive one, and that people are going to take them to their word, and they will often take them to task for the things that they're saying. And that seems to be happening over and over again.
Mm.
Now, another thing is that I also find, like, for example, at the Confederation, we have been advocating. For example, when the Minister of National Security came out and said it's not in his remit, as it were, to form a crime plan, we came out and said that, okay, we understand that it's not the Minister of National Security to formulate a police plan. That is under the jurisdiction of the Commissioner of Police. But crime is great, the solution to crime is greater than the police, yet the police are the ones who tend to be, you know, terrified. When we're looking at the greater solution of crime, which is really removing the guns from the streets, that begins at our borders. And so when we look at the system, as it were, we're looking at a system where, do we have the proper infrastructure? Do we have the radar? Do we have, what about our Coast Guard? How is our Coast Guard involved? What about a possible maritime police unit? Do we have the funding? Do we have the ability to put out a maritime police unit? Once again, because the police don't have jurisdiction over what happens on the seas. What about our ports of call, our ports of entry, both legal and illegal? Illegal would be, you know, anything that happens on our borders. What about things that are passing, that are possibly passing through bonds, legal bonds from airplanes or from ships and so on, which, you know, they have found guns coming through some of the bonds and so on. What about that, right? So that's customs and excise. Then we're looking at our legal system, which is, you know, the judiciary. Now, the judiciary themselves have come under fire from Mr. Hines after this incident in Barbados and so on. But what we're looking at is, you know, dealing with criminal matters, one. And then a greater sense is, what is the deterrent to crime? What is the legal deterrent to crime? What is the deterrent to you saying, I am going to pick up a gun today and go out there and I'm being told to kill three people, and I'm going to kill these three people, jump in my car, kill them wherever they are, follow them to wherever they are, kill them. And if I am caught, what is the deterrent? If I am caught, what is going to happen is, my case is going to go to court. I may sit in remand yard for a year or two, or maybe until I make bail. If I make bail, I'm back out. When my case actually gets called, if I happen to be convicted, I then go to jail and sit in jail at taxpayers' expense and hang out with my partners in jail. And it may be that I may be in jail for 10, 20 years, or it may be I may be in jail for the rest of my life, but that is the greatest deterrent that we have on the books right now. And to me, that is no, and to us, I think, that is no deterrent. Yet when we've come out and we've said, let us discuss about greater deterrent, let us talk about bringing back capital punishment or bringing back hanging and so on, the response from the citizenry has been, in a sense, lackluster. A, either people are afraid to talk about it for fear of victimization, or B, the majority of people have come out and said, I don't believe that should be used as a deterrent. So we, as well as the TTPS and many other people, tend to find themselves between a rock and a hard place. So, you know, because when we look at this, the solution to crime, because it's not, I don't believe in the blame game. I believe about, you know, we need to find solutions, both us as citizens, us in business, in the private sector, and so on. What can we do to assist the situation and to you know, to move that conversation forward about solutions to this thing? We seem to be getting stuck in the blame game, you know. It's your fault, and it's this fault, and it's that fault. If we as citizens, and if we as business and private sector individuals put forward, you know, well-intentioned advice, and we put forward what could be possible solutions, then we as a people are supposed to be able to support those solutions and say, well, this is what we are asking for.
We need to take a couple quick messages, but when we get back, we continue our conversation, of course, with the chairman of the Confederation of Regional Business Chambers, that's Vivek Charan, and of course with us as well, vice chair of the Confederation of Regional Business Chambers, Ricardo Mohammed. Our time moves to just about 11 minutes before 8. That time check compliments Island Finance.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
Welcome back. Our special guests this morning, Vivek Charan and Ricardo Mohammed, representing the Confederation of Regional Business Chambers. Before we went to the break, we were discussing the issue of who's in charge, basically, and how their stewardship has been impacting on the crime situation. And the topic here today is the impact of crime on business. Tell us, because we're heading up to the news, you have just about 5 minutes again before news time. Tell us, what are some of the immediate impacts of the crime situation on your membership?
Well, so, some of the immediate impacts. Go ahead, Ricardo. Sorry.
Right. So, thanks, Vivek. So, what are the immediate impacts? Being in retail business, we would have seen like, for example, most of us in the small to medium price, medium enterprise sector and the small business groups, we tend to open late hours in many instances, simply because we know that sometimes persons coming back from work, you know, they need to pick up the little one or two items before they head home and so on. Now we are seeing a significant decrease in that. On the records, the month of April so far has been one of the worst months for business, including March, leading into March, April. And within the retail sector, any dip in business significantly hurts the sector. Now, what is happening is that when people come home in the afternoon, late at night, they tend to pick up the one or two items. We are seeing a significant decrease in that. So there is a significant loss in evening business simply because people are scared to be outside late in the night, late in the afternoon, especially females traveling when they have to commute from one taxi hub to the next taxi hub. And then you have a lot of dissidents, or let me say pests on the road, harassing these ladies, making them feel uncomfortable. So even if they were planning to stop in a shop or stop in a business place to conduct whatever little shopping that they want to do, they might sometimes just avoid that and try to reach them as quickly as possible and probably try to shop during the daytime. And it's a reality that is happening across the board. You also have persons, bullying persons late in the afternoon, harassing them for the little $10, $20. You have young men, young women working hard. They may not come from a properly well-to-do community, but they're still trying, and then they have to travel into that community. They arrive there, and there are people just waiting to say, well, listen, you can't pass unless you pay me out $20 or $10. These are some of the things that are happening. It's making life difficult. Crime is impacting on the consumers significantly to a point where they just simply are fed up. One, two, because of the significant economic impacts relating directly out of COVID-19, persons haven't really bounced back as yet. They're still working. For those, there are a lot of people who are unemployed, one. Two, there are a lot of persons who would have switched jobs or got new jobs, as the case may be, and they're not getting any type of salaries they used to get before. And three, with the economy and significant price increases over the last couple of years, it really, the spending capacity of the consumer has significantly declined. And because of that, everything compounded, we are seeing significant decreases in the retail sector. Businesses have to now re-strategize on how we are going to keep our heads above the water, as we would say. We are doing the best that we can. I mean, we are faced on a daily basis receiving notification from wholesalers about price increase. Up till to recent times, no matter what business you're in, we do get in notifications from the wholesalers that, hey, price is going to go up by 5%, 10%, as the case may be. And then how do we manage that to the consumer? Because with all the consumers, we have no business. So it's very important for us to try to see how fast we can find some sort of stability to really continue to run a retail business effectively. Apart from that, we have to hire security. Armed security is very expensive, and most of us do that. It's a significant chunk that has to come out of our pocket at the end of the month, but we need to do it. We have no other choice, because we really concerned, because crime is not happening only at night time. Long time, you would have seen maybe a robbery closer to the evening time when the businesses are about to close, etc. Now, at any point of time in the day, persons just running in your place, sticking you up, and taking what you worked hard for. As not only simply that, but now is the senseless killings that go with it. So you come to rob the place, but then you're going to shoot the person for no reason whatsoever. And these things have to stop, and yeah, there's a whole holistic approach that has to go behind that.
Okay, I'm gonna have to interrupt you there, because news is next. We'll get to that holistic approach just after the 8 o'clock news, because that's where I want our discussions to focus a bit. We know what many of the problems are. We've been grappling with a lot of the problems for a significant period of time. What do we do about them? And that, of course, is the focus of the discussion after the news. We'll take some calls if there are people wanting to be a part of the discussion as well. We're speaking about the impact of crime on business, as well as the ease of doing business, with our special guest, representatives of the Confederation of Regional Business Chambers, Vivek Charan and Ricardo Mohammed.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
3.5 minutes after 8. It's the final hour of our show here this morning. We are speaking, of course, on the issue of crime. the impact on business, as well as the ease of doing business with our special guests, Chair of the Confederation of Regional Business Chambers, Vivek Chiron, and Vice Chair, Ricardo Mohammed. Gentlemen, before we went to the break, Ricardo, you were about to speak to us about some of the things that we needed to do holistically to deal with crime. And that's where I think our discussion should focus a bit. Because we all know that the cause of crime, the issues related to crime, we've been speaking about them. They've been well ventilated. They're in the public domain for a number of years. What do we do about them? Where do you think we should begin?
Sure. And thank you again. You know, the whole topic of crime has always been something that, you know, people may think there may be an easy solution. And I think what we had allowed here in Trinidad and Tobago is to really allow things to get too far. So it is, has become to a point where it's going to be challenging, but at the same time, not impossible. I mean, based on every other crime plan that is implemented by different commissioners of police, we would hear that this plan is going to be enacted and this plan is going to be put into place, and we expect, you know, to see a reduction in crime. I think the most important thing, you know, that now stands is, one, we know for a fact that the police is quite aware of everything, and they have their intelligence systems, and they know what is happening. So why is it that we not seeing crime? Is it that, one, these things are not being implemented effectively? Just like how we in the business sector may manage finances and we would manage different portfolios in business, we work with a solid management structure. And in doing so, we delegate work. We assess how the work is done. We set timelines. We set goals. But at the end of the day, the only way we can judge our success is by results. So I think that training in the police service is very, very important in terms of executing plans effectively, so that persons who are within the TTPS feel some sort of comfort to know that, you know, when we follow the plan that is being set out and we all do what we are supposed to do, we yield the results. And by yielding the results, you feel good, you feel motivated. But then what takes them to that level? They need to have the necessary tools to accomplish the job. If you speak to a lot of police officers out there, most of the time, salary may not be the main issue. Yes, salaries are important. They are being paid 2013 salaries, and salaries are a significant motivating factor. But apart from salaries, policemen out there really need the tools. And if they have all the necessary tools to do their job, I think that will motivate them into feeling a lot better about themselves. Because it's kind of heartbroken if you're in a job and you're required to do a job that will allow you to be promoted up the ranks and so on, but then you're starved of all the necessary tools.
But what,
it makes life very difficult.
But what are the tools that the police don't have that they need?
Right. So, I mean, in past discussions with the TTPS,
mm-hmm.
we would have recognized for a fact that, for example, one, vehicles has been always a major concern. I think within the TTPS, they need to have some sort of separate unit to deal with repair of vehicles, maybe a mechanics department or something, and do that timely. I mean, not everything is a brand new vehicle all the time, but I mean, if there are simple things that can be fixed timely, that will assist in response times, that is one. Two, apart from, well, the former commissioner has been helping them out with different things, with body cameras, etc. But vehicles have been one of the main things. Two, there are many times the police service will come to the private sector and ask us for assistance for basic stuff, and the basic stuff will be photocopying stuff to help them out with some administrative stuff, paper, etc. So basic things now. You know, imagine things like a photocopying machine. Many stations, it would have been broken down, not repaired. They may have to spend money outside it from their pockets to actually go to a stationery store and get stuff copied. I mean, so they're the little things. Apart from the major things such as, you know, proper crime labs and CSI units and increasing the capability of them to do detections, maybe we should have our own DNA center here in Trinidad so we don't have to send stuff away all the time and spend all that money. So this is where investments need to go into. whereby we can yield results in a timely manner, be able to solve cases in a timely manner before they start to get cold. Many instances we hear taking almost a year to get back DNA results. It has to be sent to Miami, whatever the case may be. I mean, these are some of the things we have to refocus our priorities on. And I think it is important that the whoever is in government, the minister in charge, the commissioner of police, at the helm of things, they need to sit down properly and get together, have a proper meeting with the minister of finance and figure out how funding can happen for this, and then now spend the funding effectively to achieve the goal. So you basically have to now prioritize, because we know funding is always an issue in this country. They have to prioritize now what are the two or three most important things we need to get off the ground, what are the finances required for it. And then we, within the business sector, we could come up with any kind of crime plan. It don't make sense. The police already know what they have to do. I think what we, within the Confederation, is going to stand strong on, we are willing to support any initiative that the police commissioner has put out, just in order to help them in a way that they can make their plans more successful. So if they had need help in, for example, management training skills, that is something that we within the Confederation, we have a wealth of experience of, and we can help. So we can maybe help with some training. I'm not saying really financially, because not these days the business sector really don't have much money. But especially in the small to medium enterprise sector. And so we are willing to help. We are willing to work with strategies, maybe help them work out timelines, management skill sets, etc.
Mr. John, you were speaking about a holistic approach and citizens buying into what needs to be done, and all of us coming together to get the job done. What role do you see citizens playing in this situation that we have existing?
I see citizens having a lot more power than they give themselves credit for. So when we ask ourselves, why is it that if the discussion turns towards increasing electricity rates or water rates tomorrow, that we will hear so many things being said across the board everywhere, and citizens, you know, being very vociferous about what they want to see. But when it comes to crime, people are inevitably quite silent and, you know, not really responsive when it comes to saying what they want to see and or what they want to see done. And the reason for that, I believe, is fair. I think that people are quite afraid of responding or going on record or saying anything that has to do with crime. I think that's one of the greatest effects of crime in our society, is the fear. When we look at things like home invasions that have been happening, do you honestly believe that if it is that the police manage to catch the people who have invaded a home, the second question, the question that's going to happen after that is, who is going to bail the cat, as it were, right? Who is going to come to court, come to the police station to identify the witnesses physically as eyewitnesses, right? Who is going to then go to court and prosecute the matter, knowing that they could be dealing with people from gangs? And the reality is that many people will shy away from that and say, no, I don't want to get involved. So now the conversation now switches to what in reality are gangs? And how do we deal with that, right? Biden, at the Howard University speech, he said that one of the greatest terrorist threats to America is white supremacy. And in a similar fashion, one of the greatest terrorist threats to Trinidad and Tobago in terms of domestic terrorism is the rise of gangs. And similarly, as in America and other places where they have deemed certain types of subversive and violent behavior from organizations as a form of domestic terrorism, I feel one of the things that we should consider doing in this country is legally saying that gang and gang violence is a form of domestic terrorism, because gangs and gang violence is slowly eroding, you know, our social fabric. It's changing, it's rebalancing the power structure. When we look at the rise of gangs. The rise of gangs is predicated on the availability that they have to firearms and guns, right? They now have a greater availability to guns than normal citizens have. They now carry with on them not simple pistols and handguns, which the average citizen can try and get for their self-protection through application of FUL. They actually have AR-15s and so on, which they utilize in an extreme manner. When we see the rise of gangs and we see how strong the gangs are coming out in terms of, you know, the killings and the method and means of the killing, it doesn't matter what time of day, doesn't matter what matter what time of night, it doesn't matter where it is, it could be anywhere, a market, a fast food establishment, a bar, on the road, you know. The reality is we need an equal response, an equally strong response from the authorities to say that, you know, an equally appropriate response that is as strong as the criminals. And I feel that the population as a whole feels that they are not seeing that. They're not seeing that equally strong response. And one of the things is that we always like to, we blame the police for a lot of things, but the reality is the police are a last between the criminals and the citizens. Citizens don't really have any form of defense, right? Because we have all this thing about FULs and how, you know, it's very difficult to get an FUL, it's very difficult to get our own personal firearm. But the reality is that when you look at the majority of incidents that are happening in the country, when it's particularly when it comes to robberies and home invasion, it is after the fact that the police tend to catch the criminals. When the criminals are actually coming into your place or your home, or they're actually committing the criminal act, as it were, or in the act of shooting and killing people, the reality is that very rarely are the police able to intercede at that time or before that time to save lives, as it were. Right, most of the time they catch the assailant after the event has transpired, or after the event has finished. So in any case, after you catch the criminals are still leaving victims in their wake. When you look at the tentacles of the gangs and crimes, we see it also in the jail. We see that from behind bars things are happening. We're seeing that in the jail people are getting, from time to time, they're getting cell phones, shots again called from behind the bars, contraband continually is being, you know, attempted to get into the jails despite their best efforts, and sometimes they do get in. So, you know, when the authorities, the Minister of National Security and the COP says gangs are, you know, a serious threat, they're 100% right. Their serious threat is even greater than I believe than we acknowledge it to be. And so we need an appropriate response to that great threat to our society. And greater than that is, I do not believe, and I think at the recent symposium they had on crime, the Caribbean one, they had speakers and so on, I do not believe that youths getting into gang activity is a response to poverty. I don't believe that. And I think there's been studies and so on and data to show that that is not the case. We ourselves had a recent seminar at UWE. We partnered with UWE. We had both the Minister of National Security and the COP there. And Dr. Rogers had presented a study that said that the labor participation rate is falling, and it's been falling for many years. And we're sure, and they're showing a direct relationship between the number of homicides and the labor participation rate, which is showing that with every new generation of labor into the workforce, less of them are actually getting into work. And we're seeing that over the pandemic, many young people had dropped out with the online schooling and so on, which tells its own story. So what we're seeing is that it's a fight for also hearts and minds and souls. And in a very critical way, our society is losing many young people to recruitment by gangs, in a similar way that you know, terrorist organizations recruit people to their causes. Similar things happen in the inner cities in England, in Great Britain, in Europe, and so on. But we're seeing it happening before our very eyes. And what we're actually seeing is a form of genocide, right? What we're seeing is an eradication of youth by youth within that whole gang culture. So, you know, this gang violence, this whole gang issue, the formation of gangs, how gangs sustain themselves, how gangs are growing, the power structure of gangs, what they're using to terrorize the citizens of Trinidad and Tobago. It's a serious thing, and it needs to be dealt with in a serious way, in a legislative way as well, too. That is greater than saying, well, we have a gang act, and we're going to, you know, and different things. And that's why when, you see, sometimes we end up going in circles. So, for example, we've been constantly saying it's difficult to have convictions because things take so long to go to court and air itself through court. So now they're proposing, let's do criminal proceedings without a jury. And now we're going through the whole, you know, roundabout thing about, well, we don't agree with that, and that's taking away people's rights and so on and so forth. But when we look at the face of it, again, people don't want to stand to jury duty because they're afraid to convict somebody on the stand that belongs to a gang. That's one thing, right? So if you can't get enough jurors, and if people are lying and are willing to risk jail sentence and fines and so on to stay away from jury, then that's telling us something. So if people don't want to be part of a jury, to sit in a criminal proceeding, and then we are saying, well, you have to form a jury, then that itself is going to be a barrier to, you know, to the efficient, to the efficient running of criminal proceedings. It's also going to be a barrier in the sense that already maybe jurors are saying, I don't want to get involved. Okay. I don't want to go there and don't ask me to convict nobody despite what the evidence is.
No, but
because
okay.
I don't want somebody to come after me.
I hear so, what you're saying. I do. And
there's a lot of frustration out there, you understand?
Yeah, I do. But okay, I hear what you're saying about but that you're talking about that level or that stage in the game is when you've caught someone. They've been arrested and they've been charged and they've been hauled before the courts. And quite frankly, we have a murder detection rate that is 12%. And we have a conviction rate which is even less than 12%, which says a lot about the crime situation. So the issue that you are addressing is relevant in bringing perpetrators to justice. But at this point, we ain't catching the perpetrators on them. To say that, well, this is the reason why things are as bad. And I understand the argument of, well, persons need to come forward and help police prosecute these people. But what do you say to persons who will counter that by saying, well, if the police catch more people and give us the impression that when they catch people, we ain't got to worry about it coming outside and killing we if we give evidence. People are obviously scared. Who is giving the assurance? Who is dealing with the matter from that end to say to people, listen, I am asking you to help me partner and fight crime, but I am doing this to protect you. That conversation is not being had. We're not having those discussions. We have people who complaining in newspaper articles that they're dealing with matters 15 and 20 years, they need witness service protection and nobody care about them. So while on one hand we're beating up on people and saying, all you need to do more. You need to do more. The police service, everybody's saying to the citizenry, do more, do more, do more. Who is telling citizens that when you do more, you wouldn't have these serious repercussions that you're talking about?
That's a very valid point, and that is what I was speaking to earlier as well, too. It is the idea of fair, but where does that fair lie? I mean, that's an interesting point to make as well, too. The fair lies because people feel that they are not going to be protected. People feel that, you know, the authorities can't adequately protect them if they decide to take the risk and put themselves on the line to be a witness or to give information or something like that. You understand?
Yeah, I do. But
that is the situation, and that's the situation that we're in.
That's
the real situation that we're
in. No, you're right. We are. That's the real situation. Let me put forward a suggestion, and I'll get your views on it. the police service at this point in time and crime fighting in this country is reactive and not proactive. Do you think we need to move the paradigm and create the fear, want of a different term, I can't find it right now, create that impression in the minds of the criminals that listen to me. You see, before I run in them people house, I need to think 100 million times. Because number one, I'll get caught, and if I get caught, the repercussions are going to be so severe that I might never see daylight again. Do you think we need to move to that step? Because what we're doing right now, we're working.
Correct.
So how do we get to that stage?
Well, you know, that's also an interesting point, because when we look at the anatomy of the crime, that's where some things like intelligence comes in. For example, how do the police know where a hit is going to take place? How do the police know who is going to be killed next and where it is going to happen? Right? The second thing is, how within the suddenness of a home invasion, are the people whose homes are being invaded call the police or call the police in as fast a time as possible in order to elicit a quick response time from the police?
Well, you see, Mr.
Because when we see, which is why we come back down to, sometimes we have to protect ourselves.
Well, and I take that point.
Which is why the argument about FULs and stuff like that is coming in, because nobody wants to be a sitting duck, and that is exactly what we are. The majority of us are that, the law-abiding citizens. We're waiting for the police to respond to a crime that they have no knowledge of that is happening, unless we call them and tell them respond to the crime.
Well,
if we can't call them and tell them respond to the crime, then we hope that we have neighbors who could do it.
Well, here's
other people that could do it.
Here's the thing. I kind of disagree, and I'll tell you why. Because there's a point that I've been making on the radio for quite some time. You see, the bandits and them who run in people's house and doing home invasion and carrying on murders and everything else, it is almost certain that the vehicle they use is a stolen vehicle. And why is it that the police service in this country has not cracked down on stolen vehicles? We have glaring examples. We had a man in somewhere in Sanwa shoot 4, 5, or 6 of them when they come into his home. And they crashed the vehicle just before that in another business place in Aranguez. The vehicle they used on Monday night or Tuesday or whatever was stolen on Saturday in Carapichaima. If police had been able to retrieve that vehicle just after it was stolen, they would have prevented a spate of crime that them fellas carry out using these stolen vehicles. But you have to ask yourself...
That's a very good point.
You have to ask yourself in a question, in a society like this, as small as we are, why nobody have the I don't want to say the sense, because I don't want to make it go down that road, but why nobody seems to have the idea that, well, okay, the thief in vehicle, let me see if we can find the vehicles as they steal them to shut them down. And
I agree with you. I didn't make the connection between the stolen vehicles and the crime. That's a very good point.
And that's a proactive measure.
Nobody obviously going to commit a crime in the vehicle that they own. Right?
Exactly. It's as, and you see, the breeze, because Rudolph Giuliani in New York, he did the same thing. Crime in New York was out of control, and what he did was he cracked down on traffic violations. And in cracking down on traffic violations, he identified criminals who were either out, there were a warrant for them, or they commit something and they're looking for them, or there was a stolen vehicle that they identified with all of these crackdowns, and they reduced crime by 30-something% immediately. Those are not ridiculously difficult things to deal with, but it's persons like yourself, who business owners and groupings that have this kind of collective voice. They need to force the authorities to do these simple things. Maybe simple is the wrong term, but these practical things to reducing crime. And if we have that situation, immediately crime is going to be reduced. But there are some other things that could possibly help us. Business groupings like yourself, let me ask the question. The Confederation, if I were to ask both of you, what's the number one complaint from your members? What would it be?
At the moment, it's crime.
Exactly. And yeah. It seems as crime continues to affect everyone. And this morning when the police commissioner says that she rates herself as excellent and people are upset, there seems to be a problem with people being upset with the police commissioner. But we did a poll on it this morning. 95% of the people say they don't agree with her. And there are those who would want to dismiss our poll by saying, well, Lord, only have one kind of supporters on all the station, all that kind of nonsense. But generally in this country, you both just said that the number one concern amongst your membership, and your membership can't be described as politically biased, is crime. So trying to dismiss the crime discussion because somehow or the other it makes somebody feel uncomfortable doesn't serve us well. But as the Confederation, what are some of the things that you all are doing to help your members? You're having meetings, you're bringing police officials to speak with groups, you're having sensitization drives. What's going on?
No, well, actually, we have had quite a few meetings with the... we've had a meeting with this commissioner of police. Before that, we had several meetings with the then commissioner of police. What we've been trying to do is sensitize him to things that are happening on the ground in our area.
Mm-hmm.
The Confederation has is quite a unique organization because even though we have 12 chambers within our group, each chamber is independent in its own self.
Right.
So they are able to do things independent within their own areas and so on, which they have been doing. Many of the boards of the chambers sit on police station councils. Up to, I think last week we had a meet with Acton, with some senior police members. They were talking about Operation Grace, which I think is something new that is coming out. And in other ways, how we could help many of the business groups as well to, small and medium business, under the last commissioner, they actually put up money and fixed many police vehicles and help with supplies to many police stations in various ways, whether it is printers, printer ink, whether it's outfitting a kitchen, you know, different things like that. So we have been involved in material ways to assist as much as we can, if you understand, because obviously there's a barrier past which we can't do. But those things are happening. And you see, part of the thing is we want to have the ability to dialogue with them and to speak with them is critical. Because if we don't have the ability to say, hey, this is what is happening directly to the people who are in charge, then I think that's not a good thing. I think both sides need that.
Yeah.
And that is what we keep trying to foster as well, too. And that's where ultimately the accountability lies. So what I think you're asking, Satish, is saying that, you know, there must be accountability. And in a sense, there is, right? So people are saying they're not happy with the remarks and so on, and that's the level of accountability. But then the reality is, past the level of accountability, what are the measures in place to measure performance and to measure performance across the board when it comes to crime? So crime, the fight against crime has to be measured in certain certain physical parameters, as it were. Right? It can't just be, we did good or we didn't do so good today or whatever. It has to be measured in a particular way. And how do we measure it?
Mm.
Do we measure it by the number of guns that that are seized? Do we measure it by how many murders have been committed this month compared to last month? Are we measuring it in terms of how many people have been indicted based on the murders that happened in previous months or last year? How many cases are actually going to the court? How many people are actually being convicted and been sentenced to prison? How many criminals have actually been killed in altercations with the police in the midst of trying to arrest them? How many search and seizures, how many roadblocks have they had, and what have we gained from these roadblocks in a material way, either by finding people who there were warrants for, or finding contraband, or finding illegal goods, or finding guns, you know, that sort of thing. So you know, there must be a material way in which all these things are measured. I believe they are being measured. I believe that they are being measured by the TTPS, but obviously we will not know the data upon which they've been measured. I would hope that the Ministry of National Security would also be taken into account, all these things. But even from a broader perspective, in terms of what's happening at Customs and Excise, what are the reports from people at the Coast Guard and so on, So another strange thing that's been happening, and it came up at the meeting we had last week, is many of the chambers in more urban areas are reporting that there's been a rise in the crimes perpetrated by Venezuelan migrants or South American migrants that are living in the community. And that is something new that has started to appear. And I have noted that more than one, it's really been happening in more than one area. And it's something new that's beginning to happen or show itself on the radar. And that itself is also concerning in a sense, right? So that's another thing that, is now on the table and has to be monitored and borne in mind as well as all these other things that are happening at the moment.
Yeah. Gentlemen, I know that I've had you all for much longer than I'm supposed to this morning, but as we wrap up our interview here this morning, words of advice. As leaders of this regional organization with so many significant parties underneath, and to the national community listening in to us, crime is something that affects everyone, even though they've not necessarily been victims. One way or the other, you are impacted by the crime situation that continues to exist in this country. If I were to say, well, give people some advice on how they should treat with the circumstances confronting us, what would that be?
I think one of the things that they need to do is really to be your neighbor's keepers, you know. Keep your eyes open. Look out for anything that is strange around your area. You know, be observant. You would notice from time to time cars may swing around your place, may slow down, observe your property, observe yourself. You have to look out for these things. You also have to look out for your neighbors as well. I mean, if it wasn't for some neighbors' intervention in the past, some of us would not have a clue of what was going to take place. So sometimes if we try to be our brother's keeper, and we really try to be a little more alert, we can have, I've been suggesting this, and this is something that we want to reestablish in our communities, is our basic neighborhood watch groups, and basically that, not vigilante, yeah? People tend to confuse that. Neighborhood watch groups, you know, have your camera systems, keep an eye out. Sometimes there's some neighbors that are up late, some people go to sleep early, you know, you hear strange noises, you hear strange vehicles, you have your dogs might bark. Take a peep, see what's going on from inside your house. Look at your camera system, you know. Have a good relationship with your community policing department. Many of us attend station council meetings and we put things in place. We have our little WhatsApp group that we create in our little district, so if a neighbor sees something, he puts it up on the chat group and then everybody is notified. You know, so we have to try some things. I mean, yes, we are, and many of us have applied for FULs. Some of us would have received, some did not receive. But everything has to do with training, being responsible, and really being observant. I think observation is the main key for everything else to move forward.
That's great advice for us to end our interview here this morning. It's been pretty interesting. And getting the insight from how the business community is impacted and views some of these
Satish,
things.
But I wanted to say one last thing. Wanted to say that crime is not political.
Uh-huh.
So despite what we're hearing about, you know, the about politicizing certain aspects of crime, the reality is crime is more personal and less political.
Mm-hmm.
And what people have to realize is that speaking up about how they feel about crime, or criticizing when they hear something that they don't like, or they see something they don't like, or saying that not enough is being done and we want more, does not have to affect your party affiliation in any way.
I agree with you.
What crime is so personal that it affects whether you can live or die. It affects whether harm can happen to the people that you love or the people that you care about or that the things that you've worked so hard for could be taken away from you in an instant, or you could be a victim of violence in no time. And believing that loyalty to a political party or whatever means that you have to be silent about that, it doesn't comprehend, you know, in this particular instance, right? All of us, every single citizen of Trinidad and Tobago right now is living in a certain level of fear, even whether you have a firearm or not, because the reality is nobody wants anybody to come into the sanctity of their home. Nobody wants anybody to come into the sanctity of their business and take what is not theirs and steal from themselves and their employees, or to be killed hurt in any way while that's happening. And nobody wants to just be going out and having a bear somewhere, or being out with their family and having to be a witness of bullets flying across the place and maybe somebody, you know, gets shot in the process. Nobody, and that is actually what we see happening before our eyes. Nobody is lying about it happening. Nobody is pretending that it's really happening. And so the you know, we saying that we as business people have a voice, correct. But as citizens, you know, there's strength in numbers, so the voice is even greater. And I think if the citizens demand a stronger response, and if the citizens demand certain things, I believe that those things will have to come to pass.
Yeah, that's definitely.
Because the crime situation is unlike any other situation. We ain't talking about potholes in the road.
Mm-hmm.
We ain't talking about electricity rates, right? We ain't talking about how much forex it has. We're talking about something much more fundamental, which is possible loss of life, yeah. Right? And harm to an individual and harm to people. And where the balance of power is now. Is the balance of power in those who stand by the law and those who are living by the letter of law? Or is the balance of power in the hands of men who have guns and don't abide by the law, unlike what the rest of us have to do?
Yeah.
And that, I think, is the critical issue.
I'm sure that we'll have another discussion at a later date, because this is a matter that continues to evolve. And as we go along, there will always be new issues that we need to discuss on the very same topic. So I want to thank both of you for being with us here this morning and for giving us your views, your insight, your suggestions on dealing with this problem. And I'm positive that moving forward, we'll have more discussions. Thank both of you again for being with us here this morning on the show.
Thank you very much.
And that, of course, ladies and gentlemen, where we drop the curtains on this edition of our interview. Impact of Crime and Business, Chairman Confederation of Regional Business Chambers, Vivek Charan, and of course the Vice Chair, Ricardo Mohammed.
Talk is streaming at Freedom.